Hello, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to episode number 37 of DNP Unlocked. And today, we've actually decided to do this special episode of this podcast and live stream to talk about EB3 retrogression updates. We're going to share our experience today. I'm still waiting for my co-hosts. Travel Nursing Hacker K is now logging on, so she'll be in the background. And I'm actually still setting my my secondary screen here so I can see you guys and we can interact. But for the meantime, sorry about that. While waiting for the others, if you guys can please share where you guys are located. And if you may have questions today, we are going to share information about EB3 retrogression and what's happening with the immigrant visa petition for nurses. Why is this happening? Is this something normal? Is the government gatekeeping, which means are they stopping hiring nurses? We'll find out in a bit in this episode. So again, welcome everybody and good morning from Texas. It's 8 a.m. here. This is episode number 37 of DNP Unlocked, Disruptive Nurse Perspective, an Immigrant Nurse Podcast. While waiting for my co-hosts, Kay is logging on and Anna will not be able to join us today for family. She's in a family event. Let's show our poster for the podcast. This show is actually available, and shortly this actual episode will be available shortly in podcast. All right. So we now have uploaded our first 36 episode via Spotify and Apple. We've got a lot of downloads in Spotify so far. And this is now available podcast in Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, Google Music. What other podcast channels? There's plenty. And also YouTube podcast. All right. So DNP Unlocked is now available in this podcast platforms. Go to Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts right now and download our show. All 36 shows are now available for streaming. And I love it. Even me, we've recorded this a long time ago. We've started DNP Unlocked last year. That was September last year, August last year. We're actually turning 1 year soon. And I still go back to all the things that we've talked about last time to make sure that we've captured all the information that we need to share to you guys. But basically, the goal of DNP Unlocked is a platform. We brand ourselves as the spokespeople representing immigrant nurses in the United States. So we provide resources, talks. We've invited lots of great speakers and experts in the field, in the many facets or many multiple dimensional experience as an immigrant nurse in the United States. So lots of good resources there. Download it now. It's available in Apple and Spotify podcasts. And of course, thank you to everyone who keep joining us every Sunday on our live stream. If you want to if you want to join one of our shows, we are always live streaming the shows every Sunday, 8 a.m. Central Time, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And my Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Also, Kay is streaming it live in our Facebook and YouTube and LinkedIn channel as well. My Facebook page is at Dr. Nurse Paul. All right. So let's acknowledge our viewers while waiting for my co-hosts. And this is a nice, very important information because I've seen a lot of TikTok posts, Instagram posts, and Facebook posts, influencers talking about retrogression. And I want to share my experience because I had to go through retrogression as well. All right. For those who have not followed me in the past, and this is the first time you've been hearing about my story, I went through retrogression and had to wait for almost 9 years. Here is my co-host for today, Kay. Good morning. How's the treadmill?
Good morning, Paul. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, or good afternoon, and good evening to a lot of people. Can you hear me?
Are you on a trip? Yes, we can. Yes. Are you on a trip?
Always full. I'm always traveling. You know me.
Travel nurse hacker, of course.
So I was actually logging in like 3 times already. I think the signal or some internet connection's been off from where I am right now, but all good because right now it's kind of figure out. Like, I don't know. I've been here. Hello, I don't see anyone. Paul, can you hear me? So I've been
Yes.
like,
Can you hear me,
hey.
Kay?
Yeah, so anyway, good morning. Sorry for running behind because I was having technical issue to get in. But anyway, we're here. Thank you to everyone listening. This is a good topic, Paul, between you and me about retrogression, because we both of us have different story, right? Very
Absolutely,
different
Kay.
Story.
Yes, yes.
And yours took how many years before you had to wait for that to say, let's see.
Almost
Six
10
years.
years, okay? Yes,
Almost 10.
I'm gonna share a screen later to show statistics, actual statistics from travel.state.gov or USCIS to show people what retrogression is all about. It's nothing to be scared of. Somebody asked me social media the other day, why did you have to wait 10 years? That's just how it is. I fell in line and waited for my turn. But looking back, I've already been here in the States, case for 7 years. So everything was worth it. If there's one thing that I want to share today and all the talk that we're going to talk about today is about weathering retrogression. What are we going to do? Everybody's panicking. There's retrogression. No, no, I can't go to the U.S. You can still go to the U.S. If you have priority date, your case is approved. We just need to wait for your turn.
Well, first of all, let's talk about retrogression. What does it really mean? A lot of our viewers do not understand retrogression. They feel like it's something like, you know, I was reading an article last night and it says here, oh, it's like the federal put a freeze on it. It's like, you know, there's like a lot of misinformation that are coming out there, especially when it comes to periodicals or articles that will be one-sided, you know? So there's one that I've been reading, and it's from The Hill, and it's like showing there that the federal government has imposed this to stop it, right? Like, it's like they intended and or they reasonably did it for kind of like no reason, right?
Yes.
That's how the article was portraying that this is something new. You know, retrogression, you know, has been happening for many, many years. It's decades, ever since regulation of immigration happened. So this is
Yes.
cyclical. It's not something that is unexpected. This is very expected, you know. It's like you have like a pain medication that is self-infusing, correct? I mean, self-regulated. And then even though how much you want to press on it, but if it hits a limit, you cannot give anymore, correct? Your
That's
PCA
true, that's
pumps.
true.
Your PCA pumps is the same thing. Yes, you feel like you need it, okay, give it more. And then when you need it, feel like more. But then sometimes you feel like you want to give some more, but you cannot. Why? What will happen, Paul, if you override that limit?
Well, it's dangerous for patients, and also you can lose your license, right? It's malpractice.
Yes. So if we remove that limit, it can be dangerous. So if there's no regulation, then it can be dangerous to our immigration system, correct? I mean,
correct.
You already
that
have a
correct.
Problem, you know, and then you're going to add more problem to that. A lot of people didn't realize these are set standards for many, many reasons. That's why America is a great, great country, right? A lot of people
right, that's
want
true.
To come here because of those regulations, because if it's non-regulated, it loses its value. So that's how I see it. So Paul,
right,
can you give me your insights about this?
Yeah, so basically, Kay, retrogression is a term, a loose term we use for when the USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, along with the National Visa Center, are not able to issue visas for immigrants that are already approved, vetted, approved. They can come to the U.S. because their requirements match what the visa is intended for. In this case, we're talking about specifically about employment base number 3, which is mainly what majority of nurses use because this is the skilled worker, professional worker level. And majority of nurses who came to the U.S. with immigrant visa went through this, right? So there are numerical limits. The numerical limits are a law. Okay, this is under Immigration Naturalization Act. 203G. I've researched. I stayed up late last night to make sure that we're factual today because we didn't have a lawyer, and I don't want someone saying, "Are you guys a lawyer?" Yeah, but we can research. We're informed consumers to cut it. But we use the word retrogression to mean we don't have visas at the moment. You are approved. Your petition has moved. You have been approved to come to the U.S. However, there is no visa allocated for you at this time, so you will have to wait until that visa is available. Now, it is scary, Kay, for many people because, you know, U.S. is still a top destination for immigrant nurses around the world. Even our European peers, Canadian peers, Australian peers, these are top paid nurses around the around the world. But United States still attract lots of talents, skills, and professionals with expertise, particularly nurses, to come to the US. So, you know, when so many people come in, all right, it's always affected by supply and demand. I think my internet is cutting for now, but it's always affected by supply and demand. So that causes constraint to the availability of visa. And somebody asked me, why is there a need for a limit? Why is there a need for numerical limits? Okay, let's put it this way. All right. If the immigration is wide open, this is the rationale of the Congress, not me. All right. When they implemented the law. All right. Remember, this is 1990. I was 4 years old. Okay. When they approved this. Right? I didn't even know I was going to be a nurse. But the idea is they created this law to promote diversity with immigration. If there is no numerical limit per category and even per country, then the rationale is countries with more population will have significant amount of visas compared to countries with small amount of population because you just ratio it by population. If, for example, we have 1 billion Chinese people and 200 million Indonesian, the ratio is like 1:5, right? So you have more advantage to get more visas if you are from a big population country versus small population country. So that goes against the principle of immigration, which is attracting diverse talents from diverse background. So now what they did is put numerical limit, right? Every visa for immigrants have their own intent and purpose. There are two major categories or broad categories, the family-based and what we're talking about today is employment-based. And even employment-based K is segregated to five different categories. We're talking about the third category, which is for professionals like nurses, right? They also put numerical limit there because, like I said, if you open it up for nurses, then what? 100 million nurses will try to migrate to the U.S. Now we don't get ITs, we don't get scientists, we don't get religious workers, we don't get other skilled workers that are also needed. So they did that in such a way that it's a fair game for everyone, but also competitive enough to attract top talent. So I think for me, that's pretty smart. But also, for me, it is also a little incorrect to say, oh, the country is gatekeeping nurses right now. I know there's a shortage. We need nurses, right? Technically, partially correct, partially incorrect. As an ethics teacher, I always tell my students, if it's partially correct or incorrect, then it is incorrect, something like that. So simple logic. But partially correct, yes, we need a lot of nurses, right? There's still shortage everywhere, especially in rural health. I work in rural health, okay. So I know for sure we have severe shortage for providers, nurses, doctors, physicians, everything. The thing is, immigration is a federal level law, okay? Even if the state is in dire need of nurses, say, for example, Texas, one of the biggest employers for nurses in the whole U.S., we still need so many nurses because there's 900 counties here, right? In the rural areas, there's nobody. Even if they scream for help, it will not do anything because this is at the federal level, all right? Congress has to enact a law before this is changed. So yes, there is one problem with shortage and people not receiving timely health. They're having delayed care, low quality health because of staffing issues. But also the other side is there's also the immigration perspective where we need to be diversified. We need to have numerical limits to be fair for everybody, but still attract competitive high-level talents. And I want to share this screen right now. for 2024, fiscal year 2024, which started, okay, in public sector. I work in public sector right now, so this is how I learned, oh, public sector starts a little early, okay. We start fiscal year October 1st, 2023 for 2024, and then we finish September 30th. So we're about to close the year, fiscal year for the public sector. That includes U.S. Citizenship Immigration Services. For 2024, they actually increased that number. Let's look at your EB3. Let me bring my iPad a little closer because my screen is occluded by the big camera. You guys can see that. It says for EB3, there is 4,000 to 6,000 limit for the worldwide EB3 category, 4,000 to 6,000 for E1, E2, E3. We'll focus on E3 today. And total limit for the whole world is 161,000. But Kay, you have to understand that there is also a country limit, which is 7% of the 161,000. So you see, the immigration favors families over high-skilled employment, right? That's just how it is made. There's nothing we can do about that. Like I said, if there's retrogression, all we got to do is wait. But guys, I also want to share to you this screen, all right? In 2023...
Make it bigger, Paul.
Make it bigger again.
Yeah, come on.
How about that?
This is Manhattan size.
Okay, there you go. Let's make
it.
There you go.
More.
Okay. How about that? Yeah.
There you go. Much better, Paul.
Yeah. On November 1st, 2023, at the first month of the fiscal year 2024, in EB3, there are still pending 122,000 applicants. How much are they giving for the year at the start of October 1st? This was like old news at this point because this is 8 months ago, 9 months ago. 46,000. The applicants pending at that time, not including new applicants after November 1st, 122,000. We're backlogged overall. Just in EB3 category of almost 80,000 visas, all right? These are real numbers. If I incorrectly analyzed this and interpreted this, I'll take responsibility for that. But applicants for the Philippines for the entire immigrant visa category is 288,000. Actually is everything, family-based and immigrant. But let's look at EB3, all right? I'm going to go to EB3 right here. This is family. This is, guys, available in USCIS, but since we're already here, so see, for employment base alone, these are your top countries that have gone over the limit. It says here at the start, the limit per country, remember, there's limit per visa number, but there's also limit per country for diversity, right? 11,270 per country for all employment-based visa, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? China has 65,000 pending. So you can imagine they're probably 6 years behind, just roughly considering 65,000 divided by 11. You do the math for me, okay? Philippines is 36,000. Take note, okay? This was news in November 1st, 2023. We're not including applicants after this. So at November 2023, right? November 2023, we are already 2 to 3 years behind at that point because there's 11,000 visas available, 36,000 applicants. But okay, it's really hard to predict this with full certainty because there is a trickle method where if EB1 is not used, 46,000, EB2 is not used, every unused visa goes back down to EB3. So if there's 10,000, 10,000, you get 20,000 more. EB5, if there's, I really read it in thoroughly because I mean, after I came to the States, I stopped reading this before I know this by heart because I was product of retrogression. I've been waiting as well. But I have to read it again last night. It kept me awake. I was like, oh my God, I'm learning again. EB5, everything that's not used in EB5 goes back up to EB1 and then it trickles down again to EB3. So you can have a surplus of about 40,000, 50,000 visas for EB3. But then, is it still enough to cover all the 260,000 immigrant visas where they're only giving 140,000 or 160,000 this year? If you go further down to EB3, because this is where most nurses go through, Philippines is the top in EB3. With 29,000 backlog at the start of fiscal year October 1st. So at October 1st, we are already 2 to 3 years behind, all right? And now we're gonna look at, this is 30-year analysis of all the retrogressions, and yes. It is available. You see, they were actually generous because they opened it current from October to April, considering there are 36,000 visas that are waiting, right, for Philippines. This is Philippines, by the way, because I'm focusing Philippines because majority of our viewers are Philippines. But you can also look up data for the worldwide numbers. But okay, so now they backtracked it to 2020, correct? This is 2023, by the way. This is 2023. So they started retrogressing in 2023 because they already predicted it's not enough. But okay, let's just look 10 years from now, 2023 to 2013. I was still waiting for my visa back then. If you look at it, we were current in 2023, half of it, late 2022. Yeah. Actually the full 2022, that's EB3 right there, and 2020 we're backlogged about 1 or 2 years. 2019 we're backlogged about 2 to 3 years, or 1 or 2 years as well. 2018 we're backlogged 2 to 3 years or retrogress. 2017, 2016, 2015, this was my time, backlog for more than 5 years or retrogress. Okay, let's go further to when I started. Just my own personal example, okay? Just to show you how much I've waited. My priority date was August 1st, 2008. Okay, 2008, all right? I passed the NCLEX May 31st, 2008. And my my priority date is 2008 or something like that. I have to check. I'm confused with the dates already. But back in 2015, I was still waiting, you see? It went back to 2005. 2015, we were 10 years retrogressed, right? 2014, 2017 is when I got here. 2014, we were 7 years retrogressed. 2013, 8 years. 2012, 6 years. 2011, 6 years. 2010, 8 years. 2009, when I was already waiting for a petition, it went U. You see the word UK, which means unavailable, no priority dates, nobody will ever get a visa. So this is just from the last 17 years, considering my experience. So is retrogression real? The answer is yes, all right? Is retrogression a cyclical thing, which means does it happen all the time? The answer is also yes. Is it something to be scared about? Perhaps. Is it something that will eventually move because you will be allocated with a visa, right? As soon as you get to your turn. Yes. So forward planning is important. All right. I do not think that the visa will move to current in the next 1 to 2 years because looks like a surge in the last 2 to 3 years in visa applications because everybody was doing, premium application where 15 days, they approve your visa. And that will bottleneck everything. This is exactly what happened 10, 15, 20 years ago when we were applying for visa back in our time. Back to UK.
Thank you, Paul. This is a very wonderful thing that you shared us. If you don't mind, can you share that information on the chat so everybody can take a look on those data? So a lot of people will be able to use this to their planning. And the good thing about this, well, when you share this information, a lot of people, you know, they're very frustrated, disappointed, and depressed about it. But actually, for me, yes, it is frustrated, and it's really disappointing when you are part of that, you know, current visa before, like months and months ago, that you're in current, and then all of a sudden now it's retrogressed. Kind of like, you know, frustrated and disappointed. But the thing is, in reality, this information should be addressed, like, you have to accept it. The information are there, whether you like it or not. And it's something that you don't like, but it is something that you need to know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our people, they don't want to look at visa bulletin because it disappoints them. But I said, no, visa bulletin is something that you need to pay attention. It's not something that you avoid. And you have to look at it and understand what's going on. And the reason for that is for you not to stop your life. You know, life is too short to be disappointed on things that you have no control of. That's me, Paul. You have no control of this. Nobody has control of this. Even the lawmakers have no control of this because this is a law that has been set for a very long time. That makes America a desirable place to live in. Imagine if, like you said, everybody can come in here without regulation. What will happen? Well, we're just gonna
Nothing
turn it
good.
into, yeah, we're just gonna turn it into like Philippines, right? A
Yes.
province of Philippines. Everybody can just go. It's like Manila. You know how Manila is overcrowded.
That
It's the
is
same
true.
thing with Mumbai. It's very crowded. Anybody can just go to Mumbai, right? Everybody can just go to Philippines, Manila. So what'll happen to that is now you drive down the quality of nursing because there's just so many supply. If there's no more demand, so if you drive down the supply, what will happen to the salary? Exactly how we were paid before when I was back in the Philippines. Nurses don't have much value in the Philippines. So if there's no value, how much are they getting paid? We're talking about, for me, it was $200 a month salary as an RN bachelor's degree. Some people know probably $300 a month. The best one probably is maybe $800 a month, I would say, right? The salary of those good nurses, $800 a month. And what is the cost of living in Manila? Well, I can eat there a meal of $20 meal too, right? When you go to Manila, a lot of people say, oh, cost of living in Manila is cheap. I mean, are you kidding
If
me?
you're from US,
Yeah, if you're from the US, it's cheaper.
Filipinos is absurd.
But can you find food there that will cost like a Manhattan price? Absolutely. I live in Manhattan, New York, and I went to Philippines. There's a lot of restaurants right now that are priced like Manhattan. So is it a livable salary for the nurses? The answer is no. And if you want to keep the door open wide like that, then what will happen to the salary of the nurses? It's not going to be a livable salary. Trust me. And who's going to benefit from this? Well, the one's going to benefit from this is probably definitely not the consumer of healthcare because the healthcare cost is not going down. Right? You drove down the
That is the
salary of
truth.
nurses. What happens? In that healthcare cost is never going to drive down. That's what they're saying, you know? Oh, we're going to cut the nurse's salary so cheap the healthcare. When did my health insurance go down? It never. When did my health insurance premium go down? Never. So again, who's benefiting from this? Definitely not the consumers of health. Definitely not
That's
the
true.
nurses. Someone else.
Yeah, and okay, for me, if I'm still working bedside, I'll be upset with this because I could be having like new people coming in to help with the staffing ratios, but no, right? Because there's a bottleneck with the workforce that we're expecting to come in. Imagine if your hospital is expecting 300 nurses and suddenly the 300 nurses could not come in. So what are we going to do? Patients are going to die in the lobby if I'm here a nurse because they couldn't get to beds because there's just no nurse that will take care of them. So it affects the whole thing from nurses to their families to the overall healthcare system where we're all trapped in the same web.
Yeah, so there's a lot of pros and cons on each of these, like you said, what if the hospitals who really are desperate of need of these nurses, then you have to resort to a long-term plan. Because for me,
Yes.
the way I see it, using immigration is not a long-term plan. This is,
It is not.
it will help. It is a help, sure, it will help you. But if you look at the longevity of or like the retention of the nurses in the United States, it's really going downhill. Now I think the retention rate is less than 7%, right? I mean, sorry, not 7%, less than 7 years. So majority of our frontliners are working there less than seven years.
The
So it's
average experience of nurses, and that's probably the whole nursing workforce. If you break it down to specialty, you'll probably see that there are specialties like ERK that are, I call it the revolving doors. Like you go to
Yeah.
ER right now, and I'm not saying that nurses with 1 year experience are incompetent, but we all learn. I wasn't a good nurse in my first few years, right? So that affects the whole thing. That affects the quality of care if you have more nurses with 2 years experience versus nurses with a lot of experience in
Yeah,
the bedside.
we need a lot of good mentors or preceptors out there. But if you have a revolving door like that, like I said, I work in before I work in a rehab facility, and that's my first time to work in the United States. And they told me, "Hey, this is how we do it here." That was the exact word, and I said, "This is how we do it
That's
here." And they're
scary,
like,
kid. Whenever they say that, I'm like, you guys are...
And I'm like, this is how I do here. So what did homie sign a medication administration by someone that's not me? I said, I will never sign a medication administration that I never gave. So they said, no, you have to do it because this is how I do it here. How about narcotic handoff? We have a lot of immigrant nurses in trouble for this. Why? Because they were never oriented properly. I was given happy orientation call. And now I don't know the system. I'm new. I was given 40 patients, right? And they said, okay, we hand off narcotics here, you know, you're the person who you're relieving actually had to leave early. So I said, who am I handing off this thing? I'm not signing off for something that nobody hand off to me, right? Mm-hmm. Oh no, don't worry. Yeah. The key for the narcotics is here. You can have it. And I'm like, I need to do count with them, right? I need to do count with narcotics. And I said, no, this is how we do it here. So the quality of care, quality of all this learning that, you know, that a lot of immigrant nurses come here is they're just following the people in front of them. And if they were taught the wrong way, then we're all screwed. And that's where the problem come in. How many nurses, new immigrant nurses, are being subjected to Board of Nursing investigation right away after they got here? A lot of them. And why? Because they're being told, this is how we do it here. And it's not right. The quality is destroying them. But anyway, going back. So that's one of the effects of that. What are the other effects? Well, if it's a very good hospital who really needs this people, especially rural, what are your alternatives at this point? I recommend you investing in the schools.
Right? Yes.
Investing, partnering with the schools out there. A lot of hospitals now, what they're trying to do is they're partner with high school student externs. You know, get those high school students, senior, junior year, summer classes, summer period, like right now is summer here in the United States, you know, and invite those high school students to take some shared time in the hospital, volunteer, right? Some are opening their doors for student, employment. I think there's a regulation, you know, 16, if you're 16 years old in your state, then you can ask for worker's permit and you can only work for a certain period. So there are a lot of programs out there like that. Educate a lot of high school students, what are their options? Because each state will have different laws on student externs. Okay, some will start in 15 years old, some will start at 16 years old. So if I was in your retention or workforce recruitment in that hospital, I would pay attention to those, team up with schools around your area, right? Because right now there's nothing you can do, and there's this workforce act or a bill that was submitted, and they were telling the government to remove the visa cap. Paul, mm-hmm. What do you say about that?
Well, remove the visa cap. Like I said, I think the immigration people, the Congress that passed this law was actually pretty smart. Okay. Law of supply and demand. Let's put it this way, because you've made an example about fluids and IV push earlier, right? If I dilute something like a medication, then it's not going to be as effective and it's going to work as quickly if I give it bolus, for example, on a code situation. You know what I mean? So it will dilute the talent, the skills, the competition. I know it's hard to hear this from for many people that have been wanting to go to the U.S. and probably have set a timeline already, Kay, that, oh, I'm going to be in the U.S. next year, because my friend just did that and she moved very, very quickly in a matter of 6 months. Those are what I call outliers. But, Kay, if we remove the cap and just allow anyone else, like I said, what will benefit here? Who will benefit here are countries with very big population, because definitely they have more nurses that want to come over here than countries, say, for example, Caribbean countries that are much, much smaller than Asian countries in terms of population, right? And it would also dilute the talent, okay? Because now it's all about who gets in first, not about who has the most vetted experience, who has been interviewed very thoroughly because they have 10 years experience. They were offered better than the one with 1 year experience. You know what I mean? So I think the immigration people were smart, but I also think that maybe we can increase the numbers a little bit and not throw whatever is unused to waste. Because this is a problem with immigration, okay? Any unused visas, for example, for family base, because they put more numbers in there, 227,000, for example, as shown earlier. Anything that's not used there at the end of fiscal year, September 30, 2024, everything that's unused, they're going to throw away. If there's 50,000 there that's unused, that's unused. But Congress people are saying, can we use that visa that was not used because nobody wants to apply for those visas to immigrants that are actually vetted? That's what I'm advocating for. We should not be throwing those visas away because it's such a waste, right? So, but laws are intricate. It's really hard to promote change and push for these advocacies if the people are actually controlling the situation are not focused on it because they are doing something else. So we need more people to talk about this so we can get these things going. There is a push for those extra visas to be used for in-demand visas. And we're not diluting or lowering the competencies because those are visas allocated to be acquired by immigrants anyway, right? So that's the thing. So there's so many things, okay? It's very complicated. But for lay people that are listening about on this and are looking at priority dates every month, it is very stressful. Trust me, been there, done that. Just be patient. You will get here. Now, later, we're going to talk about strategies of what to do and what to not do during retrogression because there are still people making mistakes. They sold their houses. They sold everything. And then the retrogression kicks in and they can't go to the U.S. because there's no visa. Even if you cry in front of the consul, there is nothing that they can do. It is a federal law and they will follow whatever is said to them by the feds.
I agree 100% with your call. You know, use those visas for those that are, you know, that we can use off. That will help our economy. But the question here is, how are we doing our international, how are we treating our international workforce, right? If we're going to push in more international workforce for a pay, there is a thing called pay wage discrimination right now that is happening. Right. We see a lot of our foreign international workforce being paid 20% less than what our counterparts are. And they're always saying, oh, because we paid for, you know, for people to come here. But tell me, why is there a wage discrimination of 20% it's only costing like 10,000 to 15,000 to get here? You know, 10,000 does a $5 hour. Let's say 10,000 is about $5 per hour difference. If you want to make that up, $10,000 for the cost, that's about $5 per hour. So divided by 3 years, you're talking about less than $2 per hour to make up for that cost, okay?
Right.
So, but how come we're seeing more than $10 per hour differences among foreign nurses and local nurses, right? So for me, fine, but remove the wage discrimination, okay? Fix the wage discrimination. Number two, make sure that the contracts of our international workforce are not very different from the work employment status of our local nurses. Because if you are telling me I'm the employer and you're going to give me option A, should I hire local workforce, local nurse, or B, should I hire a Filipino nurse who will not quit in 3 years because she has to pay $60,000.
Right.
And I'm going to pay her $10 sounds less like, per hour.
Sounds like right? Human trafficking to me.
It's no brainer.
Let's hire the one that tied up with $60,000 if he quit, right?
It's like, right? It's a no brainer. I'm going to hire that Filipino nurse. Now, are you providing equal employment opportunity?
Yes.
The answer is no. You're discriminating your own people. Because you know you can hire somebody $10 less, $10 per hour less, And then they will not quit because they have their visa is tied up to their employment. And they are scared to quit because they have to pay $60,000 to quit. Actually, I'm very generous because if you look at this, some companies,
$450,000.
No, 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 the other one that was really on the paper was $90,000. The other one was $80,000.
Guys, if you want to see case research about all of these, she has her list.
So now I'm
send her an email and she'll send to you.
Are we providing equal employment opportunities to our own local nurses?
We should also be protecting our local nurses. There should be fairness in everything because if you are canceling local nurses in your pipeline to hire 400 nurses, right? Like fired 400 nurses locally, but hired 400 immigrant nurses, that is purely discrimination. There are a lot of nurses that need these jobs locally too. So it has to be fair in both fronts, okay? That is what you're pointing at. And I totally agree with that because there are also nurses that are working here. They cannot be booted out because there's someone cheaper that they can hire.
You know, Paul, when previous pandemic, before around 2019, 2018, I was in New York, and I'm from New York City. You know, how many new grads have called me, Kay, I cannot find a job. It's been 6 months already. It's been 1 year. I cannot land a job here in the U.S., in my own country, right? How many new grads are being pushed away by hospital because they said, we need somebody with experience, right? We need somebody with experience. Okay, then provide those educational materials for them to support them, right?
Yeah.
They said there's a shortage of educators. Okay, that's another big problem, right? There's too many big problems on that. But anyway.
So many problems in healthcare.
Yeah, 2017 and 2024 are very different in terms of technology. Can't you use technology to supplement those? There's a lot of things going on right now with VR. VR educations are out there. Technology education to supplement those new grads. But still, I'm still hearing, Paul, in 2024, I'm still hearing a lot of new grads not landing jobs here in the U.S. Sometimes it will take them like 3 months to 6 months to find a job, right? But then when I said about international workforce, they're hiring without experience, right? I'm like, come on, give me a break. Are we very kind of like picky on what excuse are we going to use, right? You know, selective. So what I'm saying here is there are a lot of graduates here in the United States, but they're not landing jobs. Why? Because their salary is based on the market. That's the problem there, Paul. You know, whether you like it to hear it or not, that's the truth there. You're favoring international workforce because of the wage discrimination. I would recommend this lawmakers, healthcare policy makers in nursing to come up and help us fight for this wage discrimination first and removal of excessive liquidated damages. And then fine, we'll support whatever healthcare group there are they're claiming healthcare group or are they claiming staffing group. You know, there's two different there, you know? When you say your healthcare advocacy group or your staffing advocacy group. Right.
Yeah. Who are they advocating, Kay? I always ask, who are you advocating? Because advocacy is a loose term now. I want to make sure you're advocating for the right side.
Right. So now you have to understand, if you read these articles that you're seeing, please, please do your due diligence. Because health, you know, a lot of these companies or a lot of these companies are using, you know, articles or journal publication to say, hey, we're healthcare groups. But then when you look at the compromisation of those, they're not healthcare groups. They are staffing industry. And these are staffing industry companies are the one who has, you know, who has those contracts for international workforce, saying that they have to pay more than $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, even one that has sued for more than $200,000. They sued a Filipino nurse $400,000 because this nurse had to pay the breach of contract because she quit her horrible job. And this is already being called by the Department of Labor as illegal. And why are we still pushing that? Remove that first and fine. You will have me as the first supporter to remove the limit.
There's so many fraud in healthcare, okay, to be honest with you.
Exactly. The same group who has been accused by the who has been investigated by the Department of Justice as visa fraud. I mean, come on.
There's a very, very big agency right now that had to pay out millions and have to spend some of that money to invest in educating nurses to flag human trafficking law. This is a very huge agency. Yeah. I had an encounter with them years ago. I'm not going to say because I don't want to name names right now. But they were slapped with a $1 million penalty because of the immigration fraud that they're doing. This is a very big company, Kay.
Well,
and
they
not
said
only
that they're
them.
Not guilty, you know, that's a correction, their fault. They said they were not guilty of anything, but we're just going to pay for it. I mean, for me, I'm the owner of a company, right?
Settle.
Just settle because...
Settle before it gets to the jury.
it's called damage control, right? Damage control. But anyway, this is, you know, you're a company earning $400 million a year, right? What is this to pay $9 million just to keep my reputation? Anyway.
Exactly.
It is, you know, before you come clean, I mean, before you push for things to change your own first. What are you doing? You know, because right now, if you're not changing yourself and you're trying to make a change for other people, well, you know, what's the integrity there, right? Should we believe you or should we not believe you? So for me is, clean your own house first before you tell that, hey, my house is dirty. that's just for me. But I do agree. I support 100%. Those and youth visa should be given to those things that will help our country, for our economy. Yeah. But for me, before you push for that, clean up the house first. You know, clean up the house first.
Yes.
You cannot have people pushing for this visa issue one when them themselves were being, you know, investigated by Department of Justice for immigration fraud, for human trafficking.
Yeah. Okay. It's like saying, you know, come over, sleep in my house, but you don't have an available bedroom because there's so much trash that it's in the bedroom, in the guest bedroom, and you cannot allow them to stay there, but you still want them to stay there. You know what I mean?
So there's two sides of the story.
Yeah,
there's always two sides of the story. As an investor, we always do our due diligence. Okay, you have to look at all the angles. You know, who's presenting the data? Who's benefiting from the data? Who's on the other side of the data? You cannot look at both sides. You cannot just be using your own decision by looking at one side. You always have to keep your mind open because there's always going to be advocating for something. And it definitely, I can feel it in my heart, and I'm immigrant nurse. This is not advocating for immigrant nurses. Advocating for healthcare, for cheaper healthcare. But this is advocating for something that is not benefiting.
Unfortunately, Kay, there are organizations that are also fronting themselves as advocating for nurses, but look at the financial disclosure people who are funding these organizations or even this thing. You know, it's sad because, like I said, advocacy right now, advocacy is a very loose term, Kay. Everybody says I'm an advocate, but I just, whenever I hear someone say that, I dig further. Who are you advocating? I just want to make sure you are actually advocating for the right group, because you could also be advocating for this group, but you're actually being paid by people that are going against this. Something like that. It's people follow money all the time, okay? Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm an ear nurse. It's so hard for me to trust a lot of people. I don't accept information as is when it's presented to me. I have to dig further. I think it's a nursing thing, right? We assess, we dig further. We go for objective measurements rather than subjective, okay, right?
Yes, and the good thing you mentioned that, because you have to define it properly. There's nothing wrong if you advocate for, you know, random industry. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you say healthcare is an ethical, nursing is an ethical profession. Doctors, physicians are ethical professionals, okay? We're bound by ethical standards. We swore to the oath that we're going to be, you know, ethical, all right? So when you are an advocate for nursing and healthcare workforce, you advocate for ethical. Okay? There is no such thing as ethical when you're imposing $60,000 for a person to quit who's earning less than that. You're imposing a $60,000 bio clause in that contract, but then you're paying your nurse $50,000. I'm like, come on, give me a break.
Or do something unethical purposely, because you know you can settle for $9 million and still get $500 million.
Correct. And we have a lot of, you know, staffing companies or organization that even have code of ethics for recruitment. Okay?
Yep.
Okay, so if we have code of ethics for recruitment, are we being ethical? Are we pushing that? The answer is majority of the time, I would see more than 10% of the staffing companies here in the United States are not even pushing for it. So when you're advocating for this, removal of visa, sure, for what? Because you're telling me that you're a healthcare advocate, I'm totally fine with that. I'm totally cool with that. You cannot be one-sided or picky with what you advocate. If you're advocating for healthcare, there's no discussion there. You should advocate for ethical recruitment, period.
Right.
Because healthcare workforce are bound by ethical practice.
Right.
Right? If you're not practicing ethical recruitment, then you have no place on this earth to tell me that you're a healthcare advocate. You are a staffing advocate, period.
A business advocate. That's true. Yeah. Business inherently is not bad. Everything inherently is not bad. But it's how you make out of it. That's why, what are the intentions? You know, that's always what I look at. What are the intentions? Because,
But if you're presenting yourself, I'm a healthcare advocate, you're not a healthcare advocate if you're not advocating for ethical recruitment at all. So that's don't true. Misrepresent yourself. You know, misrepresentation is wrong. You cannot deceive people because deception is unethical. You cannot misrepresent because it's unethical.
Yeah, right? It can be legal, but it doesn't mean it's ethical. It's what we always say, right?
Absolutely, Paul. And there's nothing wrong. Just say, hey, I'm a recruitment advocate. I'm a staffing advocate. Something wrong, do it. You know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
financial disclosures. Yeah.
Again, financial disclosure. Not only financial, but you know, real advocacy.
Exactly. Okay, I wanna highlight the comments here. I like what Empire is saying. Empire is joining us from my YouTube channel, and he said, Dr. Paul, the backlog is actually bigger than this because this is only the Department of State backlog. That is true. The consular or embassy offices around the world. USCIS announced in the country, it's also backlogged for doing adjustment of status. Adjustment of status are people who are already here, either on a non-immigrant visa, like work visas, or what do you call that? The authorization, where you can work, but you don't have an immigrant visa, something like that. You may be a dependent of someone. And these people can get in much sooner because they're already here. They don't need to be adjudicated or interviewed because they were already interviewed coming in here to the U.S., whether they went in through a tourist visa, student visa, work visa, or whatnot. In short, they can get the visas much sooner because all they do is adjust status, right? But to clarify misconceptions here, adjustment of status, when they try to get an immigrant visa, they also count on those immigrant visa numbers. They just get it much sooner, okay? Because they don't have to leave the U.S. because they're adjusting status. And there's one thing that Empire also highlighted, which I like. The actual numerical limit, I forgot to say that earlier, is actually 140,000. That is what is allowed by the law, right? That is what it's allowed by INA rule. But and the number that I presented earlier was 160-something. Because it captured the family-based unused visa. However, Empire is correct here. Other visas that are not used are being thrown away. We're still advocating for lawmakers to do that. It's so easy to say, let's do it, but we really can't move without a law, okay, right? Administration cannot move without law from Congress. But it is also presidential election years, okay? I don't think it's going to happen this year, and fortunately. So it said here, bill is not to remove the cap. It was to capture 20,000 green cards that was wasted, give it to nursing and doctors. and use family visas have been used to employment base, hence why the limit this year was 161K and not 140K. Thank you, Empire, for interacting. But Kay, let's go to, I want to talk about strategies. We're running out of time. Strategies for those that are affected by retrogression. Let's start with you, Kay. What can you tell about these nurses that are waiting? In-house, we have a lot of cleaning to do. Local nurses, we're also fighting for their rights to get equal employment, better wages, better ratios, protection for nurses, et cetera, et cetera. But how about our peers that have already been adjudicated, vetted, right? Approved for a visa. They already have priority dates, but they're still waiting because the visa keeps going back and back and back, retrogressing further back. What are they going to do? What can we tell to them to make it valuable for them to wait for the U.S.?
So for me, you have to understand why you're first, you know. Where's your whys? Answer all your whys first. Why do you want to come to the United States, okay? So if the answer is to make my financial situation better, okay, that's a good, very good reason and a very, very valid reason. And I think everybody's reason is the same thing, right? To make my financial situation better. Some, you know, greener pastures. Of course, USA will bring greener pasture, right? So what will you do if you're in this situation? First, identify where you are currently right now. If you're in the Philippines right now and you just passed your board exam or NCLEX, so the strategy for there is, well, you will have to wait for 3 years. If you're just if your goal is to just get better life, better financial situation, greener pasture, there's a lot of better greener pasture than the Philippines. So again, start a goal, okay? Start a plan, put there what's your goal and what's the reason. Better financial situation. So now, second thing is put where you are coming from. If you're coming from the Philippines, then better pasture is anywhere else.
Except, right, you know, that's correct.
That's a lot. You know, there is a lot. You got Australia, Canada, UK, you know, Middle East. You have a lot of other countries that you can go that will fall onto that goal of better life, okay? Better financial situation to support your family. So what will I do is I will still file my application to the United States and then apply for while waiting, apply in other places where there is better situation. Okay. You don't need to be going outside of the Philippines. If there are opportunities that can be within the Philippines, then go for it as long as it's better. The second thing, let's say, I'm going to tell this because it's all about timing. All right. So if you're just starting the process, start your application and then while waiting, go somewhere else. Okay. Don't wait for America to open up. If you're going to wait for it and stop your life, you're stopping 2-3 years of your life. Okay. Don't do that. Keep going. Anything better than behind me or yesterday will be always be better. You're always progressing. Okay. That's for me. Second, you're going to look at if you're already in your DQ process. Okay. You're already DQ, and you know, document ready. That level. Again, see how far you are again in that DQ stage, okay? Because once you become current, then that visa will start flowing fast, okay? We're talking about 3 months, 6 months, correct, Paul?
Correct, okay, that is correct. You have to be documented or qualified and approved, yeah.
Yes, so if you're DQ qualified, look at what date is it now. What's your priority date and what's the current situation? If you're talking about 2 years, oh, I'm DQ, my priority date is 1 year behind, go look for other companies or other places where we'll offer you at least 1 to 2 years employment offer, okay? 1 to 2 years employment offer. Do not accept 3 years, okay? But you can accept 1 to 2 years job offer somewhere else with contingency that you can extend it on a basis of 1 to 2 years again, okay? But if now, when you're telling me that, hey, I'm DQ ready, I'm already, and I think my priority date is literally like 2 to 3 months already from that retrogression date, you know, from that priority date. I'm only like 1 to 2 months there, okay? So this is where the tricky part comes in. Should you go to other countries first while waiting for that? My answer is still yes. Again, agreed. My answer is still yes. Find a job again that will offer you 1 to 2 years job term, okay? If 1 year, you can get like a temporary visa work permit in another country for 1 year, that is good. Hello, look at that little cutie boy. Right? So that's my strategy. 1 year, with contingency to extend if I can be extended. Okay, there's most probably there's other places that will give you temporary work permit for 1 year to work there. Get your experience, learn how to talk and be confident to talk to other nationalities who speak English as well or different language, because it will help you when you get here, because US is a melting pot with multiple language anyway.
Right.
So again, you will still continue applying in different countries or different places where it will be considered better than where you are currently, okay? So I will not stop my life. And what's the reason for that? Because even if you're DQ qualified, even you become current, you still have a lot of waiting time there to be scheduled for immigration interview, okay? There's a window for interview date. So, you know, if you're very tight in the date, pick the later date that you will have interview date. And then even after being issued visa already, there's still a window for you to fly. It's not like you have to fly tomorrow, okay? Then you can still book it, like, I think 3 months, right? Well, 90 days, you have to fly within 90 days.
Mm-hmm. As long as your visa is valid. So I think expiration is actually 6 months, but depends on your medical too. Yeah,
so you can always extend it, and you can always, redo your medical, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah, what's the cost of doing the medical again, right? Versus you stopping your life. And what is the cost of that medical exam if you have to redo it? But you're earning outside the Philippines, right?
That's
and earning
true.
More, right? So for me, I'd rather pay that medical than me losing my years of life waiting for nothing, right?
Yep.
So money, you can get it back. Your life, you can never get it back. Your time can never be bought back, okay? So that would be my strategy, Paul. How about you? What do you think?
Yep, okay. Well, before I actually wrote 5 points that I want to share today from someone who actually went through a long time, okay? It was very frustrating. Trust me, I know how it feels. I waited for my visa for 9 years. It was very frustrating, disheartening, discouraging. Say all the negative words that are synonymous to that. I almost gave up on my American dream, okay? Literally, I thought it was never going to be in. At one point, I stopped checking visa bulletin because it was just pulling me down, preventing me from, going further in life, because I'm always stuck in the thought that, why is this so elusive? You know, I can't do anything else other than be frustrated because I should be in the US, but I can't, because technically my case was approved in 2008. I just couldn't come in because there's no visa. It's really unfair for me at that point to think that I'm approved, but I don't have a visa, but I'm approved, I'm qualified, but I can't get in. So, which is weird. For me at that point, I was thinking as a young professional in my early 20s, and I was thinking, I'm losing money. That could have been money for me at that point, right? But okay, there were so many valuable lessons that came in after that, right? I actually was more able to specialize as an educator. I realized that my love for teaching future nurses supersedes my ability to perform nursing at bedside, although I love both, right? I've learned so many things about myself. I've become a little more mature. If I had come into the US a lot earlier than that, I would probably have been wasting my money and probably be deep in debts right now. So the financial part, I was able to like take control of it because at that time I already learned financial responsibility, so many things. It was character developing. I remember one of my friends saying, remember when you go through challenges, it's a character development phase. All right, it's a character building phase. It is not meant for you to stop in that obstacle, or it is not meant for you to quit. It is building something out of you that you've never discovered from yourself. So at that point, it was really hard to become optimistic. But at one point, I stopped checking visibility because it was just very frustrating until in 2014, I got a call from my agency and said, hello, we're moving close. We're now 5 years out instead of 10. Imagine from 10, we're 5 years. And that's a huge development at that point, okay? Today, we're only backlog 2 or 3 years, okay? 2 years, 2021, right? At that or 3 years. At that point, my agency was so funny to hear it now, said, we're now 5 years out. You're super close. And I was what, 7 years out of school, 27, 28. I'm already managing my own business in the Philippines. I'm living comfortably. I was able to, I'm breadwinner, finance my family and all that. I travel around the Philippines. I travel different countries. I've been invited to speak in Indonesia. I was starting a career also as an educator in Indonesia to improve their capabilities for NCLEX. So I was caught off guard because I thought I got it already. I'm rooted, deeply rooted where I'm at, and I've grown. But hey, US is calling. I've been approved a long time ago. It doesn't mean that approval was taken away. For me, when I was being frustrated, when I was frustrated in the first 2 years waiting for a retrogression to lift, because they always say, it's going to be lifted, it's going to be lifted. 10 years later, it was lifted for sure, because I was able to make it 10 years later. It just took 10 years. But at one point, I wrote in my goals, US is not going to be a short-term goal. It is going to be a midterm goal. That's going to happen when I'm in 30s, because I said to myself, within 10 years. So from 20, 21 years old, I'll be there 30, 31, 32, 33. That's going to be my medium-term goals. So right now, I'm just going to be enjoying the process, right? So at 27, 28 years old, they told me, you're ready to go to the US in 5 years. Start your hospital experience again, work on your expired documents, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then the employer abandoned me. And now we have to start the process again of finding another employer and all that. It took another 2 years, 3 years, but 2017, I got here. But everything was just in my right timeline because I redirected myself and changed my perspective. It actually made it feel better versus frustrating. It's hard at that point to say, be optimistic, but it's so cliche to say this, but please be optimistic. Trust me, it was almost 10 years. There are so many people that have waited much longer than me, but it will be worth it. So these are my 5 strategies for you. First, explore other visa options. Okay, we've only talked about EB3. Now there are certain visas like H1B cap exempt. And somebody posted in our group the other day, okay, EB2. And now she made it here without master's degrees and doctorate degree. That's also an option. EB2, H1B cap exempt, but you have to seek a lawyer for that. I am not a lawyer. Yeah. I am not an immigration lawyer. And remember, the higher you go with these visas that have more restricted requirements like EB2 or much lower number like H1B, it is much more competitive. It is much more competitive. If you have 5 years experience and somebody applied on top of you that has 10 years experience, you already know the answer. That's just how it is. It is very competitive. They're going to choose the one with more experience, with better resume, with, you know, something that aligns to what the job is looking for. So, but there are other visa options. Canadian nurses, Mexican nurses, hooray, you have TN visa. You don't need to go through EB3 route. You can wait here in the States to do adjustment status. Go to the border, get your TN visa, get a job offer, go to the border, drive up there or fly, and you show your TN visa, your Canadian passport, Canadian citizenship passport, Mexican passport. You're going to be issued TN visa, all right? And then, of course, family visa is also an option if you have families here. So research that. Number 2, very important. Remain competitive, okay? A lot of people, oh, it's retrogressed. I'm going to quit nursing. I'm going to be a social media star, influencer. But guys, when that visa starts knocking and it's your priority date, they're going to check. Remember, I got abandoned because the hospital, even though nursing education is a nursing experience, the hospital wants me to be in the ER because my approval was for ER nursing. So they abandoned me. They're like, you don't have current ER experience. We're going to move on to the next one behind you that has more current ER experience. And remember, this is at that time that I was waiting for 6 years. They're like, abandoned. Okay. So I have to find another employer, but I have to go back to the ER. So remain competitive as far as your specialty is involved. You want to work here as ICU nurse? Get that ICU experience, all right? Do you know that certain certifications, like, for example, in my case, CEN, you can take it outside the U.S.? You might be wanting to come to the U.S. already certified as an ER nurse, already certified as a critical nurse, already certified as a med-surg nurse. Get those certifications in, all right? Invest on yourself. This is probably, what, $200, $300? that's going to pay off when you come here to the US. That's easy half-day shift. So don't be stingy. Is that that's a local term here, right? Don't be stingy about that. Invest on yourself. Invest on your profession, because your profession is your business, right? Okay, we talked about that multiple times.
Absolutely. Yep. That's your number one asset, your license.
And get more skills. Are you now trained as an ultrasound IV nurse? Are you now trained as an ultrasound PICC line nurse? Yeah. Remember one of our co-admins, Luis? Yeah. He is an ICU nurse, but he has so much advanced skills that when he got here, he was so highly qualified as an ICU nurse in California. And he's so confident with his skills that moving here, transitioning here was just piece of cake, right?
Yeah.
Get those skills in. Are you a trauma nurse? Get those trauma certifications, right? Are you a NICU nurse that has extra certifications for highly acute NICU babies with congenital defects? Get those certifications in. Lock those certifications. Remain competitive. Remain at the top of your game, because when it's your time to come in, they're going to look at your resume again and say, oh my God, let's prioritize this nurse because she's going to be valuable. Remember, you have to be valuable for your employer, because you're not the only one applying. 40,000 people are lining up behind you. All right, that's only for EB3.
Paul, I'm going to add something there. You know, I got my certification too. And I was an endoscopy nurse before coming to the United States.
See, so that's an added leverage.
Yes, and you know what? I like it. You know, I'm so used to the full of thing.
And I wish somebody told me about. Yeah, I wish somebody had told me about that you can take the certification exams offered by ANCCs outside the U.S. through Prometric and Pearson View Centers, and we have there all over the world. So get those certifications and invest now. This is the best time to get those overtime money to invest in your profession, because you want those resumes to be sparkling when they look at it again and say, ooh, this nurse is not just an ICU nurse. This nurse also has PICC line insertion skills, ultrasound skills, the ECMO machine trained, whatever. You know what I mean? So put that all in. Remain highly competitive. And nursing is just like that. We just have to remain competitive. And number three, this is very important. I keep sharing this ever since retrogression hit last year, 2 years ago. Do not make abrupt life decisions, life-changing decisions, life-changing events. Again, do not make life-changing decisions based on visa bulletin and emotion, right? Yes, you're like, my God, it's May 2022, okay, or whatever, and I'm June 2022, so next month it's going to be me. So let me sell my house, let me take my kids out of school, let me sell my car, quit my job, have a vacation for a month, because in 2 months I'll be in US. And then the visa bulletin comes out and say, we're going to go back 1 year. So now it's not June 2022, it's December 2021, right? You see, do not make life-changing decisions, sell your house, sell your properties, quit your job, quit your kids' schools, or assume that you will be here based on your timeline. I've shown you guys the retrogression pattern in the last 10 years, but that data has 30 years. If I can put it in a graph, I probably would one of these days. It's just so hard to do that. you would see that there's no pattern at all, okay? No. There is no pattern.
It's like an ICU patient.
Let's
keep on titrating.
You give hypertensive meds, BP go down. You give medications to increase the BP go down. It's just like that. You follow
just
the graph.
Like that. It's like, you know, there's so many variables. It's like there's 9 IV that you're trying to titrate. Even though if you put 9 bags there, there's no guarantee that what you want to happen will happen.
You have to wait for it before you decide. You do not decide before it. So do not make life-changing decisions until, this is what I say, until you have visa on your hand and you're ready to fly to the US within 2 to 3 months. Do not.
Yeah.
All right. I did not quit my job until I got my visa. That's the truth. Because I was managing business in the Philippines. I'm not going to give that up until I have the visa. Because so many things can happen, Kate. Imagine during my interview, I lost my passport inside the embassy. Somebody picked it up or threw it away. I don't know. But I got delayed by another 2 months because of that. Imagine if I already quit everything and where do I live if I give up my condo at that time, right? So the point is, no visa on hand. Do not make abrupt decisions. You only make a decision once the consul told you, congratulations, you're now going to the U.S. Here's your visa.
You have it in your hand. Like, literally. You have it in your hand.
Literally, yes. Because so many things can happen, right? And you don't want to be out of job while waiting for it. Because, I mean, bills and all that, those are going to start pouring in, all right? And what else? Maintain your licenses. Or I could not emphasize this further. Some people like to wait when they're current and then they renew the license. License renewal would probably take 30 days. Some of them 2 months, or some of them could have problems because they need CE, education, social security, and there's no renewal. Now they have to reciprocate or endorse it to another state. Well, guess what? The employer might move on to the next qualified employee, right? Make sure your licenses are active. Your exams, some English exams unfortunately expire, but some exams now, okay, don't expire anymore. Michigan exam, English test don't expire at all.
Yes.
Which is good. Because before IELTS, we have to take it every 2 years, okay? Your visa screen, if you're going through immigrant visa outside US, if you're already here in the States and you're doing adjustment status, you don't need this. Majority are coming out of the US. Visa screen is valid for 5 years, all right? So once you get your English exam, lock in that visa screen. That's good for 5 years. That should be enough time to get you here. Not saying with full guarantee, but it may be, for the most part, enough time for you to come over here, because we're only backlogged 3 years anyway. Make sure all your documents are current. Certifications, BLS, ACLS, whatever is required in your unit. Are you current on those? Make sure none of these are expired. You want to make sure that you're ready when they call you, right? And this is the most important part, number 5. I added this just today. Remember, there is a saying where desperate times call for desperate measure, right? Scammers are out there. They know you're desperate to come to the US, so they're going to show you the world shining, shimmering, splendid. That is the truth. If something is too good to be true, it is not true.
Yeah. Be careful, all right? With Jafar.
But nurses, trust your nursing intuition. You are trained to detect those red flags screaming at your face. Do not ignore those gut feelings, because that's just what we are trained to do. There are scammers promising you the world. You can get to the U.S. with a student visa in 3 months, in 6 months. Yeah, Come here as a tourist visa. We're going to hire you. This is your H-1B cap exempt. We're going to hire you. I'm going to marry you. Yeah. Come over here. Guys, please don't. All right?
Yeah.
Two things here. One, that's human trafficking. Basically, you're just making yourself a vulnerable victim, and there might not be a way out. All right? Or there will be a very, very... you're going to go through a needle hole to get outside of this situation. You're going to be a victim. All right. Number 2, that might be immigration fraud. And this is what I don't want you to have as well, because immigration fraud is two parts. All right. The employer or the organization employing you, and yourself. Because if you are fully aware that you are participating in a fraud, well, that makes you part of the case as well. So there's no way out as well as there. When the feds start coming after you, they're going to say, you know what? We know that we've given you immigrant visa, but going back, all right, you had a fraud when you got the immigrant visa. You were part of the fraud. So here, we're revoking the immigrant visa. You're going to be deported.
Yeah. So, actually, Paul, the good thing that you mentioned that, because I want to emphasize this. If you are involving yourself in those fraudulent activities, you know, you can be listed and you will lose your chance to come here to the United States.
Exactly.
And I'm going to tell you right now that there are a lot of people, they didn't realize that they were part of something problematic, right? They were just guided by recruiters or agencies, right? And they got the visa in their hand. What did the U.S. immigration said? Return those visas.
Oh my God, that's the worst thing ever. Yeah. And you're banned. You're gonna get banned.
Well, thankfully, you know, the nurses were innocent onto this. Okay, the nurses have no idea. you know, and I do agree that they should not be the one being punished for this. But just imagine that, just the mental torture, because you dealt with somebody who's scammy and fishy, giving you instructions that are incorrect. And they said, you know, and from these companies, they're just going to see, oh, let's just try it. If it's going to work, right?
Right.
You know, we can slip into this, you know, to the cracks. But then, you know, U.S. immigration will catch up to that because we have retrogression, remember? They have more time now. Before, in 2020, 21, 22, you know, it's like being a nurse being thrown to you with, hey, all of a sudden you have an ER with 20 patients. Do you think you will be able to screen that 30 patients all at the same time in the ER?
Exactly.
Answer is no. So it's the same thing that happened, that I feel it happened here. 2020, 2021, there was a bunch of visa that were not given because of the COVID. Now, 21, 22, 23, it just spilled over. The USCIS was overwhelmed, right, with visa issues.
Yeah, we had experience with one agency where because they got flagged during interviews that the job offers were actually not existing job offers. Every nurse that they, this was 2019, 2020 in Lefora Group. Every nurse that was filed I-140 from that agency got flagged for RFE, RFE's request for further evidence, which means we're not disapproving you, but we need more information. It's not a nurse's fault. It's the sponsoring agency, because you know USCIS probably lists that these are the agencies we're going to scrutinize further, so don't be involved. And another thing, Kay, right, remember, when you're desperate and you're vulnerable, you're more likely to get scammed. But you also can say, I do not know about this, because in the US the principle says ignorance of law is no excuse. The USCIS, if you say to the immigration guy or girl in the border, you come in with your immigrant visa and they flag you, you say, I don't know about this. The immigration person will say, well, have you not been listening to DNP Unlocked? Because literally the information is out there. I'm just kidding. But the point is,
exactly, right?
They're assuming that you know it and you're part of it until you can prove otherwise, of course. Yeah. But just don't put yourself in, it's a traumatizing experience. It's already hard to come over here, okay? I would not be able to imagine myself if I've been caught with that, because that's, it's already extra stressful adapting to a new environment, moving from one country to another and bringing my life and starting over from the ground up. It is difficult to do that. So don't subject yourself to such traumatizing experiences. You are more likely to be scammed when you are desperate. Get off visa bulletin tracking. Let us do the work for you and we'll dissect it for you. For now, keep on improving yourself as a person, professional. US will be there for you. When you're approved, you're approved. It's not going to be taken away. It's just a matter of when. So that when, it's hard to predict. I'm sorry, because we will not be able to tell you when, because I still get messages, Kay. My goodness. My inboxes are so flooded with so many messages. I'm doing live Q&As now to just answer those. But when do you think I'm going to be able to go to the US? I wish I have that answer. To be honest with you, I really do, but I don't. I said, nobody could predict that very, very accurately with full certainty. Only the USCIS would know that. And so that's it. That's a sad truth. So retrogression is a cycle, all right? It moves. It can move very slowly, very quickly. The thing is, you have to be reactive. When it moves quickly and tomorrow they say, or next month, they say, we're going to move 1 year ahead. Are you ready for it? Is your documents, are they current, right? But if they say, we're going to move back a little bit, 3 years, are you okay with it? So make plan B, plan C, plan D, right? Okay.
Yes, I agree to that. Yeah. Let's go over, Paul. Some people have some questions on the chat.
Yes.
Okay, let's go over the chat first. I wasn't able to greet. Hey, Jerry, good morning.
Yes, Jerry. If you're still, thank you for watching us all the time.
Erlene Henry from Jamaica. Just want to say hi to you. And Clear-tailed.
Hi, Erlene.
Hello, Kai Castro. So did we answer this? So Jorley has a question there. Jorley, so retrogression is lengthening the time for nurses to lessen their work duties due to nurses pending additional staff in each nursing department. So that's a question, Paul. Do you want to answer that?
Well, I think we've explained this earlier. Retrogression can impact the nursing shortage because literally That's why they're attracting nurses to come over here. They need more nurses. So yes, there's still shortage, but we don't also want to estrange or boot out our local nurses from their jobs, because that's just going to add up to the situation, which is the nursing shortage. Nursing shortage is not because we don't have enough nurses in the country. Okay, we are over 4 million here in the U.S. It's,
yeah.
The thing is, how many nurses are working bedside? Because nurses are getting burnt out, moving out of the bedside, and are now just doing business outside of healthcare. Yeah. So that's it. But could retrogression affect nursing shortage? Definitely, because that's one of the measures they're trying to do to cut that out.
Yeah.
If that's a question,
also,
I hope I answered it. Yeah.
And Jordy has a follow-up question, that retrogression time is like, wait, 5 to 10 years. What do you advise for those who are already USRN? So we did give you advice. So, but just for the sake of the time frame, like Paul said, we have no idea. There's no, we don't have the magic pill for that, right?
What about non-NCLEX? Well, this is the best time to take your NCLEX. Retrogression should not stop you. This is what a lot of people did. Yeah. In 2019, we were retrogressed, 2020 retrogressed, and then we became current from 2020 to 2022. Everybody started taking NCLEX 2020, 2021, 2022 because it's current. And now it's retrogressed. Nobody wants to take NCLEX again. Well, that's totally incorrect. You take NCLEX when it's retrogressed. So when it's current, you're already applied for a visa. You're already approved. I like to do that. Sorry, I'm a little animated today. It's the coffee sinking in.
So I'm going to give you an example, Jorley. During my time in 2020, 1999, nobody was applying to nursing because they said everybody's going to IT. And there was a no need for Filipino nurses. There was no big search, right? So they said, go to IT. I went to nursing when nobody was going to nursing because there was no big need for that.
Right.
I went to nursing. And as soon as I hit my senior year, there was a big demand of demand for nurses. After finishing my senior year, I graduated. I took my CGFNS. You know, right now you can take your NCLEX exam if it's available in your country. I took it right away. I took my English exam. And that's all within less than 1 year after finishing my nursing program in the Philippines. And then when the employer came, I have all my NCLEX. My CGFNS that time, which is comparable right now to NCLEX. My English exam, I already applied for visa screen too. And guess what happened? As soon as I find my employer saw everything I have. They filed it right away, filed my I-140. Yes. I got my visa in 8 months.
Yep.
Well, less than that. I got it. And there was no premium processing, but because all of my documents were ready, I was ready to go, you know, and I got my visa in less than 1 year. So this is what I'm saying
Okay, some people would say you're lucky. That's not lucky. Yeah. That's being smart.
I would say sure it's lucky, but actually being proactive to have all your papers ready, and you're the one of the first applicant, if the employer sees that you are all set to go,
everything they need. Yeah.
Yeah, so me, I might have risk. Yeah, I might have paid for visa screen even without an employer yet, right?
That's pretty smart. I like that.
Right? But then I took a risk. You know, what are we talking about risk? High risk that I might not land a job, sure. But I mitigated that risk because I know that there are a lot of employers coming in. And usually when visa pours out, it will last like 1 to 2 years, like that time frame. Okay? So I was within that time frame. High risk, high reward. And what happened? I got my visa in less than 1 year. So because of my proactivity. Right. If I didn't do that risk, sure, but I can just always apply for visa screen. Right. I mean, I can always do it again. Right. So it's not like I'm going to be losing $10,000. Right. Visa screen is not thousands of dollars. So what I'm saying is being proactive right now, it's like you know, nobody's talking about it. Buy low, sell high. Right.
As an investor, traders.
You go when nobody's talking about it. Buy the rumors. Okay.
They say sell the
news.
When people are talking about it, it is too late because it's already. Yeah,
exactly. Right? When a lot of people are talking about it, it's kind of late already. You want to do it when there's not much people really talking about it. Do it, because when people are talking about it, you're already off. Pass that. Okay, so that's my.
So retrogression is not the end of the world, guys. It's a cycle. So don't. Yeah. Just do it. Just do it right now while it's retrogress.
Yeah. Okay. Leotid has a question. Is there a possibility that U.S. employers will abandon U.S. because of retrogression? The answer is yes.
Yes.
U.S. employers can always change. Always change within the process and make sure that, but you don't want to have a change of employer from the time of your interview and arrival. That doesn't work like that.
Right. No.
If you've been abandoned upon arrival, but you know, 2 months ago there was an employer, and then upon arrival they said, "Oh, well, your previous employer doesn't exist, and we're gonna change you somewhere else," where that might be, you might be a victim of immigration fraud by your employer. True. So be quiet. You know, that's a different abandonment during retrogression is possible, but abandonment, you know, from interview date to arrival, which is like 2 months, 3 months, that is fishy. Call an immigration lawyer or call a lawyer right away when you're in that situation. Do not allow yourself to be transferred in a different place that is different from what is actually was given in during the interview visa, I mean, embassy interview, because that is immigration fraud.
Or change so specialty.
Yeah, so please talk to your immigration lawyers. I mean, immigration lawyer that is not from your employer. Get a lawyer who will read your contract, because that may be those situations where they're changing your assignment. And that was flagged by Department of Justice as immigration fraud. That was a big investigation that cost $9 million, right? $9 million repayment. I know there's so many things more. All right, so Paul, you want to go forward with the other questions there? What if you don't have work experience? If you need to move to another country prior to getting work experience?
Well, get work experience. That's still retrogression. Yeah. So you still have time to come in and do bedside experience. But yes, they will want you to have bedside experience. That is for sure. Unless you're going through nursing facilities, they're not very strict with requirements. But I mean, if you're going to nursing facilities, skilled nursing facilities, and someone that has 3 years experience is applying on top of you, well, you might get abandoned. So stay competitive. If you're moving to another country, as soon as you get there, find a nursing job.
All right. Thank you very much all for joining us. It's so packed with information, right? Packed with information. Yes. Well, thank you all for joining us, Paul. I think for me,
thank you, Kay.
Never stop your life for some things that is not in your control. Okay. Mm-hmm. Never ever rely on things that you have no control 100%. You can sure look into it, take consideration for it, but never stop your life. There are things that you can control in your life. Do it to make your life better. Okay. Right. So that's my last word there, Paul.
Thank you, Kay. And of course, retrogression is temporary. It's not a permanent issue. So keep your hopes up, guys. You will be here one day. The journey will be worth it as long as you keep your head up and do not let this temporary setback take the life out of you. All right? Enjoy the journey. Yeah. Retrogression is temporary. We're going to have more shows about this in the future. This might be quite a thing for a bit, Kay, but we're going to keep talking about this to encourage you guys. And of course, again, DNP Unlocked podcast is available now in Apple and Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Podcasts, Google, Samsung Podcasts, available everywhere. Please download this now. This particular episode will be available in the next couple of days. And there are so many resources that are available for you through DNP Unlocked. If you want to be a part of the show, talk about your personal experience, we would love to have you in the show. Please send a message to me, info@drnursepaul.com. That's my email. You can also message me or Kay or Anna in social media, and we're going to talk to you. We appreciate everybody that has joined us today, all over social media. We're going to announce our show for July in the next couple of days, because we have yet to finalize our lineup for the month. If you guys have suggestions of what you guys want us to talk about for our future shows, you also let us know through our social media or through my email. Thank you, guys. Download DNP Unlocked, an immigrant nurse podcast, in Spotify, Apple, and YouTube. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Kay. Have a great Sunday. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.